from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the Green New Deal wilted on the Senate floor yesterday as Democrats walked away from their own proposal.
This is nonsense, and if you're going to sign on to nonsense, you ought to have to vote for nonsense.
Well, they didn't want to vote for it. Utah Senator Mike Lee, he had a little fun explaining the hidden realities of the bill on the Senate floor, bringing out the dinosaurs. We'll talk to him in just a moment. Also, justice has not been served in the Jussie Smollett case, according to Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. We'll talk about it with Valerie Richardson of the Washington Times. And does the Jussie Smollett and the, what does the Jussie Smollett case and the SPLC have in common? Well, two attorneys who have been researching SPLC for a number of years, Chris Gasek and Sarah Perry, join me with that answer. Also, the U.S. District Court of Appeals here in D.C. gave the go-ahead for President Trump's prohibition against transgenderism in the military to take effect on April the 12th. Despite the court's go-ahead, Nancy Pelosi plans to push forward with a disapproval resolution tomorrow morning in the House. You can weigh in with your member of Congress by giving them a call at 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. Or better yet, just have the Stand Firm app, and you can connect with them directly. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. Yesterday on the Senate floor, 42 Democrats and Bernie Sanders, an independent from Vermont, voted present. Despite all of their talk about climate change, global warming, they refused to vote for their own bill. Joining us now to talk about this, Utah Senator Mike Lee, who took to the Senate floor yesterday and explained the hidden aspects of this bill. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's good to be with you.
I was a bit amazed at the hypocrisy of Senator Schumer. I want to play a clip of what he had to say. Play clip number one of Senator Schumer.
Leader McConnell will follow through on one of his specialties, gotcha politics, by forcing a vote of the Republicans' version of the Green New Deal. Make no mistake, Republicans want to force this political stunt to distract from the fact that they neither have a plan nor a sense of urgency to deal with the threat of climate change.
Now, Senator, this was their bill that was on the House floor yesterday.
Yes, it was their bill. It was their own creation, and yet not one of them voted for it. This is yet another indication that this was not a serious proposal and didn't deserve to be taken seriously because it's utterly unserious.
Well, and as you pointed out, using a few props on the Senate floor, you did poke fun at it, but you also explained the serious nature of this bill and what it would do to our economy, what it would do to transportation. I mean, I don't blame them from running from it because the bill is horrendous what they're putting forward, the cost. You point out anything, any aspect of this, and it's outrageous.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, pointing out the fact that they want to eliminate cattle, that they want to essentially do away with airplane travel. These are not practical solutions. And I think it does our country a lot of harm to suggest that somehow they are, or to suggest that the American people, particularly the poor middle-class Americans who would suffer most under this plan, should be asked to even take this seriously or consider it. It's offensive.
How is it that a freshman member of the House, I'm just going to use the name here, it's Democratic Socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, how is it that she can be really leading the Democratic Party around by the nose on such outlandish policies as this Green New Deal?
Well, you know, she's someone who has a big following. She's someone who speaks words that a lot of people find pleasing, and she gives content for which I guess there is some type of demand. But look, with that audience comes some responsibility, to make sure that you're talking about public policy that can actually be effective at doing something. Short of decimating the American economy, the proposals that she has put forward would not do a whole lot. I'm not sure what good they would do the American people, and it would come at a tremendous cost, and I think that's harmful.
I mean, I think the cost we're looking at is about $98 trillion. I mean, this is that's not. I know we get lost in the dollars up here, the trillions, millions, but this is a lot of money, and to show for it, there's really nothing would be accomplished. In fact, this appears to be just a massive socialist giveaway that's tucked away in this bill.
Yes, and that's one of the dangers of talking obsessively about wanting to put the federal government in charge of remaking the way people consume energy, is that it gives the government too much power. And too much government power leads inexorably to socialism. And most of us look at countries like Venezuela and think that we should shun such things like the plague. We shouldn't do anything like unto that.
So is this an educational moment, Senator Lee, for the American public? I actually think that's what Senator McConnell was doing. He said, look, you guys want to talk about this? Okay, here it is. We're going to have a vote on it. We're going to put it on the Senate floor. We're going to talk about it. And you vote your conscience on it. Of course, they want to running away from it, trying to derail their own piece of legislation. But this is a moment, I think, in which we can educate the American public as to what this party is now promoting.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes if you do what they say they want to do, it causes all kinds of problems. If you call them on it and say, let's vote on it, and when you have not a single Democrat voting for it, four Democrats voting against it, and all the remaining Democratic senators, including the presidential candidates among them, voted present, refusing even to signal their theoretical approval of it. That's a problem. That's an indication that they don't take their own ideas seriously.
So, explain for our listeners the process of the senators not voting yes or no, but just voting present. What's the motivation behind that? What is that signaling?
Okay, when you cast a vote on the Senate floor, typically it's a binary choice. It's either yes or no. There is a third option, and the third option is to vote present, where you're not counted as having missed the vote, but you're not asked to weigh in one way or the other. Sometimes people might cast a present vote if they feel they have a conflict of interest. Sometimes you might have somebody cast a present vote if they feel deeply conflicted about a certain policy. They like one aspect of a bill but deeply dislike another. In this circumstance, it's very unusual to have an entire party or the overwhelming majority, 43 out of 47 Democrats, including the two independents who caucus with the Democrats, choosing all in unison to vote present. It's really weird. It indicates that they at least don't support this. They weren't willing to vote yes for it.
But again, I'm pointing out that this was their bill. This is what they're talking about. This is what they're accusing the Republicans of not addressing. And I mean, the way I see this, Senator Lee, is this is something they use to kind of whip up their base into a frenzy, saying, you know, they won't deal with climate change. We will if you put us in power. And so Senator McConnell says, okay, here, you can have a vote on your bill, and they run from it.
Yeah, exactly, which says a lot about how they really feel. And it also says a lot about this climate change mantra that many of them seem to be repeating. One of the problems that I've had with that is I have yet to hear of a serious proposal dealing with an attempt to limit greenhouse gas emissions that wouldn't simultaneously overturn the American economy, that wouldn't have grave effects on our economy as a whole, including and especially poor and middle-class Americans. And yet they continue to use this to attack Republicans, using us as a sort of pinata in order to say you're not doing anything. But when we ask them what they would do, and we bring up a measure, a vote on a measure like this, they don't vote for it.
So this is more a political issue than a policy issue, because they know if they advance these types of policies, if they were to put their name alongside this, this would make them vulnerable, because about 67% of voters say they see proposals like this as largely socialistic and they don't want any part of it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. They don't want any part of it. They don't want to actually own it. They just want to own the messaging of it to their own base. And I think that's fairly cynical. And I think that ought to warn us about the wisdom of that policy and the policymakers behind it.
So will this quiet them down for a while, or are we going to continue to hear about climate change, even though they had their chance on the Senate floor?
Oh, I think it'll quiet them down for now, but I don't think they're going to stop talking about climate change. I do think, however, this should help to, assist us in encouraging them to tell us what they want and what it is that they mean. Now that they've had a chance to vote on this and they've chosen not to vote for it, not a single one, I would like to know, when they continue to talk about climate change, what it is that they would do. Do they really want to impose a new tax on America's poor middle class? Do they really want energy costs necessarily to skyrocket, as President Obama took it, as he put it? I don't really think they want that. They at least don't want the political accountability that would go along with that. But in the meantime, they want to use this as a pinata, and I don't think they ought to be able to have it both ways.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I think it was brilliant what Senator McConnell did by saying, okay, look, you guys, you want to talk about it? Here, vote on it, and they run from it. But I also think, before I let you go, I just wanted to ask this, because I thought you did really well in bringing out the lunacy of this bill. But what brought out the tauntauns?
Well, tauntauns are an important part of everyone's life, and especially anyone who's ever watched Empire Strikes Back, which I think is probably the best of the Star Wars movies. The tauntauns, as I pointed out on the Senate floor, they're environmentally responsible. They can provide warmth on a cold, wintry evening if you're stuck out in a cold desert. So, we all be focused on
that. No flatulence from the tauntauns, right? Like the cows.
Yeah, exactly. No methane emissions of any kind.
Yeah, they're safe. They're all right. Good. Well, I'm glad that you're environmentally responsible. Senator Mike Lee, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Tony.
All right, good job. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, if you haven't seen it, you can go on YouTube and watch his discussion on the Senate floor of this last night. And he brought out the dinosaurs, the tauntauns. And it was, sometimes you just have to respond in kind to show how foolish a proposal is. And that's what this Green New Deal is. I mean, $98 trillion is the price tag associated with it. That's $600,000 for every household. This is insane. But this is what the new Democratic Party is pushing. All right, when we come back, justice has not been served in the Jussie Smollett case. That according to the Chicago police superintendent. We'll talk with Valerie Richardson of the Washington Times next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website is tonyperkins.com. Well, yesterday there was an incredible development in the hate crimes hoax staged by Empire actor Jussie Smollett. All the charges were dropped, despite the fact that the police said they had a basically airtight case that he, in fact, staged all of this. Even the liberal Democratic Chicago mayor, Rahm Emanuel, was outraged by the prosecutor's decision yesterday to drop the charges, calling it, quote, a whitewash of justice. The police chief also saying this gives leaves a bad stain on the police. They were furious about this. Well, here to talk about the story is Valerie Richardson, national reporter with The Washington Times, who's been writing for the paper for the last 30 years. Valerie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Valerie, let me just start with this. First, explain to our listeners exactly what occurred yesterday.
Yesterday, the prosecutors in the case, this is the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, basically the DA, went to court and asked that all the charges be dropped against Jussie Smollett, and the court did so. We're talking about 16 felony counts stemming from his report that he was the victim of a hate crime. The police had investigated and concluded that it was a hoax, and as a result, all the felony charges were filed, you know, based on his false statements, or what they called his false statements to police. And, you know, these were pretty serious charges. I mean, he could have gone to jail for, you know, a while, but they dismissed the whole case, and it shocked people because the police had put a lot of time and effort into this case. They felt it was airtight, and there was really no reason given other than the fact that they decided that, you know, his community service, he did a weekend's worth of community service, I guess, for the Rainbow Coalition, and his, you know, lack of criminal record, shall we, you know, this sort of thing. They said it just wasn't worth pursuing. But there was obviously a huge outcry because what it looked like to a lot of people was, you know, this is a guy who got off because he's famous.
When you look at these charges, I mean, the grand jury was involved in this. So this is not something that, you know, the police just kind of cooked up. But, you know, when you have charges flowing from a grand jury investigation, I mean, it's quite significant. Then for prosecutors not even to allow it to go forward into the court at this point and allow this to be resolved in court, but simply dropping the charges, that doesn't happen very often. So it makes it highly suspect.
It seems like it is very rare. You're hearing that from prosecutors, you know, across the country, that this is extremely unusual. And so as a result, we're seeing a lot of attention focused on Kim Fox, who is the relatively newly elected state's attorney. She was elected in 2016. She came in with as sort of an insurgent candidate based, and she had a lot of financial support from a group called Illinois Safety and Justice, which is funded entirely by George Soros. He has funded more than 20 through these groups. He has funded more than 20, you know, prosecutorial races in jurisdictions throughout the country. And he apparently started doing this after the Ferguson case. He has apparently a mission to see more progressive and minority prosecutors in place. And so she came in with a huge boost in that respect and has really devoted herself to criminal justice reform in a way that has really angered the police department. The police department is not happy about what she's doing. She's vacated sentences of or convictions of you know, even violent criminals based on police misconduct. And they feel like she's gone too far. She's pleaded down cases that they say shouldn't have been pleaded down. And in fact, the police union has asked for an investigation, a federal investigation into her involvement with this whole case. And in part because of that, and in part because she apparently tried behind the scenes to get the whole case moved to the FBI. As you know, there were emails that were unearthed a few weeks ago by the Chicago Sun-Times showing that she had communications with Tina Chen, who's a lawyer, but it used to be Michelle Obama's chief of staff in the White House, apparently knows somebody in the Smollett family and was in contact with them and reached out on their behalf to Kim Fox and said, can you talk to the police chief? And she did. Obviously, the police chief didn't move the case to the FBI, but the fact that she even did that caused her to recuse herself from the case. So, nonetheless, the police union is saying, you know, you can. It's not enough to recuse yourself. You've got to recuse your whole office. At that point, you have to get a special prosecutor.
Right. Yeah. And again, as a former police officer, I spent about 10 years as a police officer. When you go through a grand jury and you get charges, in fact, 16 charges from a grand jury are quite significant. The prosecutors generally would take those forward and let it be resolved in court. They can always, you know, plead it down, or they can move with lesser charges. But rarely would you see all of those charges dropped. In fact, I think I have a clip here. Bobby, do we have that clip of the police chief? Okay, I think we got a clip of the chief, because he was irate. And it's interesting here, Valerie.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
This Rahm Emanuel was also in the Obama administration, so this is not like a Republican-Democrat type thing.
No, it's not. And you've got David Axelrod out there criticizing the decision too. I mean, you have some high-level Democrats out there who are criticizing this. Rahm Emanuel's whole point was, you know, you're making a mockery of hate crimes laws if you let this guy off. And you're right. It's not. It obviously Republicans are criticizing it too. In fact, it's very difficult at this point to find somebody who's not criticizing the decision, with the possible exception of the Empire writers. Jesse Smollett is a star on the show Empire, who put out kind of a celebratory tweet yesterday saying "See you Wednesday." But that's about it. I mean, very few people have come out in support of this. Now, one thing that I think is interesting too, though, is when the chief and the mayor yesterday were speaking about, you know, basically condemning this decision, you know, they couldn't believe the charges were dropped. They called it a whitewash of justice. But neither one of them actually mentioned Kim Fox. They did not mention her by name. They really focused on Jesse Smollett.
Mm-hmm. Before we ran out of time, what surprised you most about yesterday's action?
I think, you know, just the one thing that surprised me was that the police chief and the mayor said they had no idea it was coming. Apparently, when you saw it on TV was when they found out about it. They didn't get any warning from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. They were as surprised as anybody. And I think that's one big reason that the backlash has been so intense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. That this blindsiding the chief and the mayor on a case that drew international attention, it makes it even more suspect. Valerie, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right. To find out more about the Washington Times, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're going to continue this conversation because there's a connection between the Jesse Smollett and the SPLC. What is it? We talk about it next. Don't go away.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is @TPerkins. All right, I wanted to play this clip from the police superintendent in Chicago responding, as Valerie pointed out in the last segment. They were completely surprised. In fact, they were at a graduation ceremony for police recruits, I think. The mayor was there as well, and so they got the word that these charges were being dropped. No heads up. I mean, there's reports there's bad blood between the prosecutors in Cook County and the police. But it's not political. I mean, it's not like it's Republican-Democrat type thing because they're all Democrats for the most part. All right, here's the clip from the police chief.
Do I think justice will serve? No. Where do I think justice is? I think this city is still owed an apology. I've been a cop now for about 31 years. When I came on this job, I came on with my honor, my integrity, and my reputation. If someone accused me of doing anything that would circumvent that, then I would want my day in court, period, to clear my name.
That was Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. And if you recall, the part of the whole thing, this engulfed the city and the nation once again in this racial tension, that this was somehow motivated by someone with a Make America Great hat again, or Make America Great again hat. Can get those words in order. And so they this was racial. And of course, they reacted to that. And the police chief said, look, when the facts came out that this looked like a hoax, he said, you know, we can't do this. We can't allow for that. This tarnishes the image of Chicago. Not that it's really hard to do up there, killing capital of the world. But nonetheless, the police were trying to do their job, submitted this to a grand jury, and the charges dropped without even notifying the police chief, police superintendent, or the mayor. Now, what does this have to do with the Southern Poverty Law Center? You say, why? You're scratching your head. What's you thinking? What connection could there possibly be? Well, Valerie mentioned this name, Tina Chin. She was the chief of staff to Michelle Obama. She's known as kind of a fixer. All right. She's the one who actually was involved with the prosecutor up there and the family. And apparently, reportedly, tried to move this to the federal level and get the FBI involved. but she's also the one that the Southern Poverty Law Center called in the wake of their current implosion to clean up and fix the Southern Poverty Law Center. Well, joining me now to talk about this and all of these connections, Chris Gasek, one of the attorneys here at the Family Research Council that's been doing research on the Southern Poverty Law Center for a number of years, and Sarah Perry, who heads up a number of coalitions here at the Family Research Council. Chris, Sarah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, let's talk about this connection. Chris, I'm going to start with you. The connection with Tina Chin and the Southern Poverty Law Center and Jussie Smollett.
Well, it's like you were basically saying, the SPLC fired Morris Dees. They decided to have an outside investigator, which is commonly done in a lot of these sorts of situations, you know, look into the culture of the organization. So they hired Michelle Obama's chief of staff, Tina Chin, former chief of staff, and she's a lawyer who's in Chicago. And it also turns out that within days of the event of the Smollett, let's say, alleged attack upon him, she was trying to get the case, not just getting the FBI involved, but getting the case transferred from the Chicago Police Department to the FBI, right? And so in light of all the things that's happened to Donald Trump at the hands of the FBI, you can kind of wonder, wow, this is sort of interesting. It's also interesting because the Chicago Police Department did such a phenomenally good job investigating this case. I mean,
yeah,
they
put a lot of time
tremendous.
Into it. Yeah, I can only imagine the cost of that investigation. Oh. Sarah, I mean, this very interesting development here with the connection with the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Obama administration. Could this, or not administration, the Obama kind of organization, could the Obama organization, their reinvention after leaving office, could this be an effort to kind of plunder the Southern Poverty Law Center that has about $500 million in the bank?
I think they probably smell blood in the water, as a lot of other individuals do. There have been a number of liberal publications themselves who have said this is why the SPLC is why liberals look bad. So even their own political family has sort of disavowed themselves from the SPLC. And it wasn't just a travesty of justice in the Jussie Smollett case. It will be a travesty of justice when Tina Chin comes on board to the SPLC to do allegedly this internal civil rights audit. She is not interested in creating a culture that values equality and justice, as the SPLC has been so known for in the liberal media for years. But rather, this is a case of inside baseball, in which what she's doing is opening up the coffers to an organization of individuals who understand what Chicago politics looks like and make their home in Chicago to start with. So really, I anticipate that this is something we're going to be seeing a lot of in the future.
All right, Sarah and Chris, I want you to stick around. We're up against a break. I want to finish this conversation on the other side of this break, because I think it's really mind-boggling, the connections here, the blatant, I would have to say, almost corruption. Of course, it is Chicago. I get that. But still, not even hiding. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to continue our look at this when we return. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday to you.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. All right, hey, let me, before we go back to Chris and Sarah, let me remind you, I mentioned this earlier at the start of the program. The president, and we talked about this many, many times on the program, reversing an 11th-hour unilateral decision by Barack Obama when he was leaving office to basically set a cultural time bomb in the military with his transgender policy. It would not completely ripen until after he was gone and the next administration was in. Well, the president in July of 2017, after he was in office, that's when it came to fruition and said, wait a minute, this makes no sense. This is crazy. We're not going to do this. Cost money. Makes no sense. Does not help us win wars. And so he undid what Barack Obama did. Well, immediately there were lawsuits, like three different jurisdictions lawsuits. Well, they took it all the way to the Supreme Court because they were enjoined from there was a stay preventing them from implementing the policy, which just says, you know, if you are a biological male or a biological female, that's what you've got to serve in the military. Doesn't matter what you think in your head, you just have to be what you are. Well, the administration went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court ruled that the administration had the right to go forward until it was completely adjudicated. And the final U.S. District Court of Appeals in D.C. yesterday gave a go-ahead for the president to implement this policy effective April the 12th. Now, all that said, Nancy Pelosi and her radical new band of socialists are going to advance tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock a disapproval resolution, not binding, but they just want to make a statement. You have an ability to weigh in with your member of Congress. And you'd say, well, I have a Democrat, I have a Republican member, so I don't really need to weigh in. Yes, you do. They need to hear from you that they should support the president as commander-in-chief and the policies that he has put in place to ensure that our military is prepared, able, and ready to defend this nation. So give them a call, 202-224-3121. That's the Capitol switchboard. Tell them you might not know. If you don't know who your congressman is, that's okay. It's a judgment-free zone. But you can just give them your zip code, and they will tell you, they will connect you, actually, with your member of Congress. 202-224-3121. But better yet, if you had the Stand Firm app on your phone, we would notify you and give you the tools right there in your pocket on your smartphone to make that call or to make that contact. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. Okay, talking with Chris Gasich and Sarah Perry about the connection between what unfolded yesterday in Chicago with the Empire actor who, I guess, he must be a really good actor because he acted out his own attack, went to a grand jury and 16 charges filed against him for basically falsifying this crime. This is a serious deal. A lot of time, money put into this investigation. Charges were dropped. Tina Chen, who was the chief of staff for Michelle Obama, has become like a fixer. And she was involved in this. And Chris, exactly what was her involvement in Chicago?
Well, in this instance, what happened was within days of the event itself, she apparently was hired. I don't know the exact relationship, whether it was commercial. I imagine it was. She was being paid. The parents were trying to get the court, get the case moved out of
the parents
of Jussie Smollett. Mm-hmm. Didn't like the way the publicity was going on and all these sorts of things and leaks that were happening, apparently. I mean, this is the story. And so then Tina Chen contacts the essentially the prosecutor, the Cook County prosecutor in the case, Fox, and starts jawboning her to move the case from Chicago police jurisdiction to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So out of out of local jurisdiction into the feds. So they must have known that they've got some friendly feds up there in Chicago, and they wanted it out of that, out of the police department. So this was even before, this was way early in the whole process, around March 1st. So that's what Chen was involved in. And then apparently the Chicago Sun-Times got wind of this somehow and asked for a open documents request. And she supplied text messages and emails. So there's just like no doubt. I mean, there's back and forths and with things like Fox saying, oh, it would be great if we could get it into the, you know, into the feds. And it was it's pretty revolting, actually.
So Sarah Perry, then Tina Chen was hired by the Southern Poverty Law Center in the wake of Morris Dees being fired. Of course, since then, Richard Cohen has resigned. There's kind of an implosion going on over there. I mean, I'm not quite sure who's running the Southern Poverty Law Center. But this puts her really in the catbird seat, sitting on $500 million that the SPLC has tucked away.
Not only that, it really has to be noted that the culture at the SPLC, it's really laughable at this point how many public accusations of both sexual harassment and racism have come to public light, and not from favorable news sources. These are major reporters like the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, even left-wing rags like Current Affairs Magazine, who have said it's a joke exactly how pandemic racism and sexual harassment were within the organization, so much so that the legal staff in its entirety resigned in 1985. In 1994, the Montgomery Advertiser ran a series about how Morris Dees was known for his racism and his sexual predilections. Again, nothing happened. Multiple human resources complaints were filed against him, and it only was when Meredith Horton resigned in a letter signed by 20 other African-American attorneys that it finally made the light of day, and at which point Cohen decided he could do nothing else but resign because this had, quote, happened on his watch. Well, shortly thereafter, Rhonda Brownstein, the legal director, who would have been tasked with setting the chart for all of the litigation taking place in that organization, resigned without comment just on Friday. And then, suspiciously, Jocelyn Benson, who was the Secretary of State for the state of Michigan, also disappeared from the website. Well, she happens to have been a longstanding member of the SPLC's board of directors. So this is five individuals who have left the organization. And we now realize that Tina Chen, coming in to do a human rights or a civil rights audit, and again, I'm using very large air quotes here, is already playing inside baseball because she is an Obama acolyte. She comes in understanding that these are friends of hers, and as luck or good fortune on her part would have it, Kim Fox, the state-level prosecutor, had received over $400,000 in George Soros PAC donation money for her campaign. Now you ask yourself, why does Soros invest $400,000 in a state-level attorney, state's attorney campaign for election? And you have to wonder if whether or not the sense of this was already in the political air, and that he had an understanding that Morris Deese and the individuals in Chicago who have pushed that form of left-wing progressivism, because it is, after all, the home of Alinskyite tactics, if they knew that this was sort of going to change the tide of current events, and that if anything should happen, they would want to make sure that the state's attorneys were on the take. That's what it looks like to us.
Wow, Chris Gasek, that sounds like collusion to me. let's talk about, just for a moment, the Secretary of State that Sarah mentioned, Secretary Jocelyn Benson. On Monday, she was listed as a board member of the SPLC. Yesterday morning, I think it
disappeared.
Now, actually, I had on the program yesterday Tyler O'Neill with PJ Media, right, who reached out to the Secretary of State asking about this, and they said, "Oh no, she resigned when she took office." But we actually have a copy of the website that listed her in the bio. Her bio didn't say, you know, in fact, the first line of her bio said that she was the Secretary of State of Michigan.
Right.
So that was in the bio. So why would a bio before she took office have that listed that she was the Secretary of State? So someone's not being honest.
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery what's going on with her and sort of the timing here. But it is.
It's like rats that are jumping right off a sinking ship. Is what this
well,
is.
I'll tell you one thing that happened in the meantime was there was a really unfavorable New York Times story about the SPLC. That's what, you know, between Monday and Tuesday, that was one big event.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal in liberal politics.
But I remain the money is a factor. I mean, you remember when the USSR melted down, mm-hmm, there was the concern about the nuclear weapons and who got a hold of them. I mean, I see all kinds of people that will be scurrying to try to get the levers of control here.
Oh, absolutely.
Of the
SPLC. This is the big pot of gold in liberal politics. This is the prize.
And Sarah, it was, you know, just recently announced, I think it took place a year ago, but just recently made public news that the Southern Poverty Law Center has created a C4. So there's no longer any indication that or even
pretense,
right? That they are not involved in politics. They're at least coming out open in that sense.
Well, and I have to tell you that for quite a long time, there have been individuals within conservative circles who have said, "How do they conceivably skate the lines on IRS regulations? Because they are so clearly campaigning, and they have so clearly crossed that apolitical divide that at least they had the wherewithal in 2018 to organize a C4 so that they could push actively for particular candidates." And again, I find it interesting that Kim Fox, who is the state-level prosecutor, gets a $400,000 influx of cash in a Trump election year. 2 years later, the SPLC forms a C4, understanding, of course, before all of the pins have been pulled from the grenade, that they would have used an opportunity through the C4 to make sure that Trump is not elected. And indeed, the fundraising letter that just went out 24 hours ago by Brian Fair, who is the current acting chairman of the SPLC board. In this fundraising email to the SPLC membership, he talks about Trump specifically, how they need more money to fight the Trump agenda, and also mentions specifically Tina Chen by name and how she headed up the Time's Up coalition to push Trump out of office. So the pieces here connect in such a stymieing way that the investigation itself back in Cook County was already compromised, as the Sun-Times recognized from the outset. The minute Fox and Chen communicated over text message, the investigation was compromised. And even Rahm Emanuel saying, this is a whitewashing of justice. What a travesty. It shows you how wrong factually this situation is and how obvious the malfeasance is to everyone else when Rahm Emanuel himself right. says something went wrong here.
Yeah, you know it's bad when he acknowledges it. But here's the million-dollar question. Maybe I should say the $500 million question. Given the revelations that this is no longer others that are saying this about the Southern Poverty Law Center, this is employees, former employees of the Southern Poverty Law Center making very clear that this was a con game. They were essentially, this organization was a cesspool of racism and bigotry. So how long will organizations like Apple, PayPal, CNN, and others stand by the moral standard of the Southern Poverty Law Center? Are these organizations going to continue to embrace the moral standard of the Southern Poverty Law Center that that is very clear now that they were completely morally bankrupt?
Well, it should be no time. So it's hard to, you know, we can see how the left kind of operates where, you know, you get the Mueller report and they're on to some other kind of, you know, they sort of turned a corner. But it seems that they're really SPLC.
But in this case, you know, Sarah, the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, they have this, you know, they've labeled our organization along with about, how many other, 50 other?
Yeah, something like that.
50 other Christian organizations. So that every time that sometimes in the media they make reference to ABC organization, you name it, as a hate group. And that comes from the Southern
sure.
Poverty Law Center.
Right.
So if they are going
right.
to stick by that label, that means they're sticking by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Right. Yeah, they shouldn't be used.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, sir.
Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
No. Once they decided that, you know, they should never have used these labels anyway, but the point is now the whole method, the whole everything behind
well, it's
them.
Exposed.
And the
exposed.
It's just got to be.
But what you have, you can't separate that corrupted standard that they put forward from them. And so those organizations that want to continue to use that are embracing the standard of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
It's going to be hard to pretend that it's okay now.
Yeah. All right, out of time. Sarah, Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Tony.
All right, folks, and thank you for joining us as well. Until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.